Thank you. First of all, let me tell you just a little bit about myself. I started off as a classroom teacher. I taught European history for 4 years. We went from the French Revolution to the present in a semester, so if you dropped your pencil, you lost a decade. That's how fast we were going. And it was just this trip. And then I became a principal and a superintendent. I lived with my family overseas. We were in Hong Kong at the International School in Hong Kong, and then I worked with Daystar University in Nairobi, Kenya. You sort of understand that whenever my creditors would find me, I'd have to leave the country for a few years, and that's why I went overseas.
What's your real name?
I am in a federal witness protection program. That's right. So we're going to talk about how to help missionaries when they come home. And eventually all missionaries, well, not all, most.
Can I get that writing?
Most come home for some reason or another. Sometimes it's kids having a love affair with chemicals. Sometimes it's the spouse just having a love affair. Sometimes it's financial reasons. Sometimes it's mom has Alzheimer's. But sometimes it's because there is conflict. The dark secret underbelly of mission life is that the most common reason why missionaries leave the field is conflict with other missionaries. You bought that kind of a car, you're going home again. What do you mean you're sending your kids not to our mission school? Do you think that dress is appropriate for your wife to wear? Those are the kinds of things that just rankle people. And we're going to talk just a little bit about my experience. For 7 years, I was working with the Evangelical Free Church, Reach Global. I can laugh about this now, but during my time at Reach Global, we went from 550 missionaries to 502 missionaries. So my job during that 7 years was to help 48 fully supported missionaries return home and find something else to do. And it usually went like this. I would get a call, Danny, this is Mike in Tanzania, and Sally and Philip are coming home for a home assignment, and we don't want them to come back. And that was the most common introduction. Something had been torqued, something had gone wrong, there was conflict that was unresolved, and geographic cures seldom work, but that was the opening salvo most of the time. So I became the outplacement specialist for Reach Global. And that's what we're going to talk about today, because it opened my eyes to some pretty significant opportunities that missionaries have to use their transferable skills back in a different setting. So I'm going to stand out of the way, and we'll just walk through this. You've got all the handouts, so take notes along the side if you would like. But you know, the ideal missionary is a healthy person, right? We want everyone to be healthy, and the frustrating part of my position with Reach Global was that for 9 years there had been an absence of psychological screening for missionary candidates. It had been, if you can raise support and if you can pass the theological screen, you're good to go. What we found was that during that time, several people went whose marriages were in trouble, who were bipolar, who had undiagnosed depression, adverse childhood experiences, the ACE factor. There were dozens of situations where families were in turmoil and they were sent anyway. And so this is what we were looking for. We were looking for somebody who was humble, hungry to share Jesus, and a great set of people skills. By the way, if you've never read Patrick Lencioni, this is from his book called The Ideal Team Player. You can buy the book for $20, but you're going to find that it all boils down to these three things. If you can find team players who are humble, who are hungry to do something, and have great people skills, all of our life would be better. So we're looking for healthy people who have good EQ, that whole emotional intelligence that allows them to grow personally, stay connected to Christ, live in a healthy relationship, and deal with the challenges of a cross-cultural situation. They also have skills that they can use. And in truth, wouldn't we all love to be on a team with that woman?
Yeah.
I mean, that would be fantastic. And yet, sometimes, that's not who comes. But we want our communities to be Spirit-led and dependent on the Holy Spirit, to have healthy relationships, including biblical conflict resolution, the whole let's talk privately before we bring anybody else in, and then if that doesn't work. But that's not how conflict often happens. We also are looking for philosophical unity, and I'm saying not theological unity, that's part of the package too, but how are we going to appeal to the people that we're trying to win to Jesus? There's a philosophy of missions, and every mission has a different philosophy, but we got to get that clear. We would like to have a clear strategy. We'd like to have partnerships with churches. We heard this morning about support, and sometimes it's online, but sometimes coming, that's great if we can have it, but it's not always there. Wouldn't it be great if we all loved our leaders? Oh man, that's the ideal community, that leaders recognize that they're not perfect and they are students of leadership themselves. Wouldn't that be great if a leader didn't think that he or she knew everything and was just going to meter it out to us little by little? Peer care and partnerships with, well, and if money was not a problem. So let's agree that that's the ideal. Okay, now we're going to shift and talk about what it's really like. Yes, it's true that everybody's more productive if they're doing ministry teams and in community with each other, but that's not always what happens. So what causes people to leave the mission field? Well, health is an important criteria, and many sending fields now, sending organizations, have said we're more concerned about you being a healthy person than you getting out in the mission field. And that's a good thing, but it also means that there's a gate that people need to walk through and be examined or have a conversation with, or to have a dialogue about what constitutes health. That it could be spiritual health. Yes, you have passed our theological tests. It could be relational health. How's your marriage? Can we put our finger on the pulse of someone and find out if their marriage is okay? What about rebellious kids? Or what about spouses who feel that they're God's gift to humanity? How do we decipher that? Emotional health, intellectual, physical health. Missions it's not a cushy job, even though much of it might be urban. There are frustrations in all those areas. And, let's face it, not everybody is a team player. Some people are reclusive. They are painfully introverted. I mean, that was a surprise to me when I was dealing with missionaries of how often it was so, how I felt like I was carrying 80% of the conversation. That there was this introverted nature that you sometimes wonder how are you going to make eye contact with someone and talk to them about Jesus? And that was a concern from my standpoint. So that led to the phone call. Denny, you know, this couple is coming back, and we don't want them to come back to the field. And sometimes it wasn't just their missionary partners. Sometimes it was the national partners that they were working with doing church planting in Romania or Czech Republic or Tanzania or the Philippines or wherever it was. And the national partners are saying, enough with this person. We don't want him to come back. So all missionaries need these things to know where they stand within an organization. And what I'm about to tell you sounds like due process of law, because that's what it is. And it is this. People need to know what's expected of them, and mission agencies aren't really good at that. Please go and use your gifts and do what God's called you to do. And then they get overseas, and people are going, well, we don't like that. Could you please change? And they go, well, wait a minute. You told me I could do what I wanted to do, and let's be clear about what it is that we're expecting people to do. Then, if a problem arises, a clear description of how they've deviated from what's expected. And this was my beef, quite honestly, when those calls came, and I said, have you talked to them about this already? Oh, well, no, we wanted you to do that, Denny. Okay, well, I did that the first time, and I learned not to ever do that again. And it was worth saying, if you want them out of the country that badly, you need to get in an airplane and fly over here, and we're going to meet face-to-face and talk to them together. And sometimes that was the missing link, that it was a total surprise. Well, what do you mean you don't like what I've been doing? And then time to remediate. Time to say, we do expect you to actually be in the Mission Center for our Monday meetings. No exception. Oh, okay, well, I'll start showing up for those now. Or we do expect you to communicate with your donor community, with your supporters. And it needs to happen at least quarterly. Oh, so once a year isn't enough. No, it isn't. And time to remediate and to get that fixed. And then finally, an understanding that if it doesn't change, there will be some changes. There will be consequences. Okay, so this is just preface. This is preamble to what I think you walked in to talk about. 4% per year is a typical sending agency attrition rate. So that means that every 25 years, the mission is empty. Okay, if the mission doesn't replace people to come back in. Most go home due to illness or age of parents or kids who are in trouble. Some are visa issues. Last time that I applied to go to India, there was a little supplement that came with my visa application form. And I had three questions on my application to go to India. I mean, have any of you been to India lately? Okay, so three questions are you traveling, carrying any religious materials that you intend to leave behind? Are you going with the sole purpose or an implied purpose of asking someone to change their religion? And third, do you intend to do biblical training? And there I was thinking, how do I answer these three questions and be honest with my character, because I was going to train past, so I'm thinking, okay, I can send everything electronically, so no, I'm not carrying anything with me to leave behind. Am I going to ask people to change their religion? No, these are already pastors who are there, and they're already on board, thankfully. And is it up to me to try to have this biblical-based conversation? And at that point, I said, I think we're going to talk about organizational leadership. So it was a hard question, but visa issues are real, and trying to get them to Russia or Ukraine or China or India, I mean, they are not stupid governments. They are not stupid. But I dealt with the 1% who were involuntaries. They weren't ready to leave. So during the 7 years that I was doing this, my goal was to accept that I'm a flawed human being and they're a flawed human being. And yet God has helped me through my professional life to develop some ways of seeing things about vocation that might be helpful. I've been in for-profit settings, I've been in not-for-profit settings, I've been in several quadrants of vocational life. We're going to talk about quadrants in just a second. But I'm a student of vocation life. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Dave about this guy who was this job counselor who on the side and on weekends impersonates the president, and they, through a series of unfortunate events, he actually is asked to step in to the White House. And he says, don't you just love it when somebody walks out of the office and you see the look on their face and they say, I've got a job. And that was my job for 7 years, helping people who, for one reason or another, had their tail between their legs. And I'm going, buck up, we can do this. We can figure out where you can land on your feet. Helping create a plan gives people empowerment. I love the phrase, plan the work, and work the plan. And people say, I don't know where to find even where jobs are available. One of the handouts that you have, if you're looking for a job in the Twin Cities, that's your Bible right there. But I created documents like that for every city that was home base for missionaries returning home. Cincinnati and San Diego and Dallas and Kansas City and Boca Raton, Florida, and Charlotte, North Carolina. I became this geographic vocational counselor, helping work a plan. And the first role was to help people understand their strengths. So I know all scripture is inspired, but I do have some favorite verses. And I love this verse, just knowing that God looks at me and he says, Denny, you are part of my work. You're my workmanship, and I've created stuff for you to do from the foundation of the earth. So would you stop feeling sorry for yourself and just get up and do it? And sorry, that's the Denny translation of Ephesians 2:10. But you've probably seen all of these self-knowledge tools. I love StrengthsFinder. When I would interview teaching candidates, they would, I would say, tell me what you're good at. Tell me your strengths. Oh, I don't know. And those were pretty short interviews, weren't they? And yet, Strengths Finder, you know, you can get this, costs about $20. It's a book called Strengths Finder 2.0. There's a single-use online tool in the back, and it comes up with five things that you are really good at doing that are just natural, like breathing. It's not hard for you to do it. My five, by the way, just in case you're wondering, first one is ideation. If you are in a brainstorming session, you want me in the room with you. I can come up with seven ways to do anything. Just think about it. Second, it's maximizer. I love taking people at the 95th percentile and getting them to the 100th percentile. Then it's strategic. I know how to break down complex things into bite-sized chunks and just figure out how to solve this problem. And then self-assurance. Well, you say, isn't that egotistical? Well, until you think, do you want to have Eeyore for your boss? You know? I don't. And so somebody says, we can do this. And they convince you that this is where we should go. And then the last one is relator. I love working with people, getting to know them on a deeper way rather than superficially. And yet what I found is that there are 29 others. There are 34 strengths that Don Clifton has come up with. And they're just this easy tool to help missionary families say, here's what you're good at. Five things you can just say, memorize these, and there you go. My wife, by the way, number one is strategic. So she thinks she knows how to break down complex issues into smaller tasks. And it's only number three for me, but I have self-assurance, so I'm sure that I'm right. So it becomes this way to understand your spouse a little better, too. Some of you might know Myers-Briggs. If you're in mission care, I'm an ENFP. I love the mission prayers, you know, the Myers-Briggs prayers. By the way, the prayer for ENFP is, dear Lord, help me focus on one thing, and look, a bird! And there are these prayers for all 16 of these Myers-Briggs categories. By the way, if you want me to send that to you, just email me and I'll send you that copy electronically. DISC is another one. Do you know that 70% of the world is a high C? D is dominant. It's about 3% of the population. These are the bosses who just by the sheer personality like to get things done.
Gary Smalley called them the lions.
Okay, the lions. I are the influencers. I'm a high I, and that's where I live. That's about 12% of the population.
Otters.
Yeah.
Fun loving.
S is about 15% of the population. These are the steadiness, the science, the
suitability.
Thank you. And then 70% of the C, consistency. Don't like change. You know, most of the world doesn't like change. They drive the same way to work every day. I can't imagine that. You know, and so people don't like change, and yet mission is filled with change. Let's do this differently. And 7 out of 10 of our missionaries are going, I don't know what to do with this. So these are tools that help us do our work better. Cross-cultural adaptability index is another great tool that our shop has used and other sending agencies have used, mostly on the pre-mission end, just to help candidates to know, here's what you should expect, and you may not like it. So let's talk about that. Sometimes the MMPI is used by sending agencies. The Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, it's a more intense, you have to be a licensed psychologist to use it. But it's another tool that is often in the arsenal for sending agencies, or for when people come back with a crisis. Okay, so most of these are done in an informal setting, but the MMPI needs to have a psychologist. So what I found is that there were four quadrants that missionaries tended to fall into when they came home. First one is, a lot of people became a missions pastor when they came home. They'd had 4, 8, 12 years of experience, and oftentimes it was at the sending church, but not necessarily. So some of the 48 that came back, I'm guessing that 10 of them wound up in church leadership back home. It was familiar, they were known, they knew the territory, as we learned from the music man. They got to know the territory, and it was a good fit coming back. Sometimes it was as an executive pastor, not really dealing with the public all that much, but paying the bills and just kind of understanding the work. Then some went into government work. Do you know that with some of the skills that missionaries have, they actually do know how to work with volunteers, and they do know how to do public speaking. And sometimes it's organization, sometimes it's working on as a staffer. Two people of the 48 became speechwriters for politicians because they were really, really good at communication. One of those two was in Washington, D.C., and the other one worked for the State House, the Lieutenant Governor's office in Idaho. But they just gravitated toward government. A lot of them went into education. Probably a third of the Reach Global missionaries were teachers or educators, sometimes health educators, and they just fit back into a school setting. You can imagine it, having been a former principal and superintendent, if I get a resume and it's, I'm bilingual, I'm trilingual, I'm certified, and I teach math, and I'm going, I'll come to your house to interview you. You don't have to come to me. I mean, those are highly sought after commodities. But some went into Christian education, a private school, where a teaching license is not a requirement. And many of them landed in the school setting back home. But the surprise for me was half of the ones returning went into business. And when we start talking about these 10 transferable skills, you'll see why. So here we are. These are 10 skills that if you would go to a missionary, they are normally humble people, self-deprecating, and you say, well, Mike, Julie, what? Tell me what you're really good at doing. I'm just a missionary. Yeah, but let's talk about that. Can you, for instance, commit yourself to something unselfish that's larger than just you? Well, yeah. I mean, that's what I do. The Great Commission. We talked about that this morning. That's pretty big deal. Secondly, can you inspire others to buy into your vision? Well, of course. You can always support. Sure. I know how to do that. How about can you help other people come on board and assign jobs out and kind of know how to build teams on the field and get others to do stuff for the betterment of the church you're trying to plant or for your school or for your medical clinic? Well, yeah, I know how to do that. Can you do all this with volunteers without a paycheck? Sure. That's easy. How about public speaking? I do that every Sunday. Do you know that public speaking is the greatest fear of Americans? And this is an annual survey that's done by Gallup. Let me just tell you that number four, the fourth greatest fear of Americans, is death.
Comes after giving a speech.
So people would rather die than give a speech. Okay, number three is bankruptcy.
Wow.
Number two is death of a loved one. And number one is public speaking. I mean, isn't that amazing? And it's been that way for the last 25 years on this Gallup survey. So that's a pretty big deal. If people are comfortable speaking, that's good. My wife, Pat, says, Denny, the only thing that you like better than speaking in front of a large group is speaking in front of a large group with a microphone. And that's partially true. So, communication skills. I have heard missionaries talk, like Larry Gardner. I had tears in my eyes last night listening to Larry talk at the workshop where she was talking about losing her husband, Dick, and the changes in her life. And I'm going, this is a woman of strength and character. This is somebody who knows how to communicate. But many people in the field have that same characteristic. International experience. What percent of the U.S. population has a passport? Do you know? 28%.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So if I would ask that question in London, it would be 98%. I mean, Americans don't have international experience. We don't want to go someplace where we're going to miss evening news and where the dollar is not strong. Maybe Hawaii, it's only four time zones away. But, nah, we don't want to go there. And so people that come back with international experience, they have this, their horizons have been broadened literally and figuratively. They understand the sensation when you walk into a supermarket and you're overwhelmed by the number of boxes of cereal that are there. Because when we lived in Hong Kong, you could buy Cheerios. That was it. And it cost $6 a box. And my kids said, Dad, buy three or four. So we can eat. I mean, that you don't get that if you've never gone outside of the U.S. Missions is about results now. It's about being able to say, here's what we have accomplished. It's not, here's how many years I've been on the field. It's, we've been able to train seven local pastors to give them a seminary in a box and time to teach and time to launch and time to support. And there are seven churches that have begun because of the work that we've done. I mean, that's how mission reporting has changed. It's not we've been in this village doing missions work, trying to convert people. Somehow there has to be results. Capacity to communicate in two or more languages. Most missionaries do have language, and one of the unreached people groups in America, by the way, is the deaf population. Mm-hmm. And I've seen recently many missionaries who are trained in ASL and say that this is my mission language and I'm going to become a deaf interpreter. And there's just this ability to communicate and do something. And then lastly, international currency exchange. Missionaries have got this down pat. They know what the dollar is worth compared to their local currency. Okay, so with these 10 characteristics, you can look at the sheet of paper. What business is not going to want somebody with even just five of those things? And so half of the missionaries that came back from Reach Global wound up working for airlines, working for international banks, working for small businesses, doing trade internationally, perhaps in the country where they used to live, where they still have contacts and can introduce the business. And you know what? Of these 24 that came back, most of them started off making six figures. And of the 48 that I personally escorted out of the organization, all but six of them said thank you. But many of them, though, they fought it at the start and said, all but six said, you know, this is really what needed to happen. Because all of a sudden, they knew they had gifts, they were not failures, they could do other things, and all that they had learned was transferable. It was off doing something else. So, second sheet that you have, and I just put this up there with all four of these slides, just so that you can see. If you've ever searched for a job, or if you've ever helped someone search for a job, it can be pretty lonely and very discouraging. And the secret to it is to adopt the attitude of a circuit riding preacher, where you say, this weekend, I'm going to visit these six websites. And on Monday, I'm going to visit these six websites. And on Tuesday, I'll look at these six websites. And all of a sudden, it wasn't, oh, there are 75 websites. I've got to look at them. I can't do it all. And it's planning the work, and it's working the plan. And coming alongside people who are discouraged and sad, and this is where your optimism is going to help. Because if someone that you support needs to come home, and they're going, I don't even know where to start with this. It's making the plan. Most of us have written cover letters and resumes, but it's especially hard for a missionary to do that. And sometimes it's hard because the organization that they might fit in with also might be afraid that they're getting someone who's going to front people with their Bibles every Monday morning. And so some of it is a regrouping of how do we fit into a different environment and a new culture in a way that doesn't frame off people because of our faith background. When I first started off as a principal, a public school principal, it was an asset for me to say, I'm an elder in my church. During my last years as a school administrator, it was a detriment to say that, because it caused people to wonder, am I going to beat people up with my faith? And am I going to try and missionaries will have that leap to overcome. And we'll talk about that in just a second. There are people who will look at resumes and know how to determine what the right words to say. I'm not sure that I would advise a missionary coming back to say, well, I was a missionary with Pioneers for 17 years in Spain or wherever they were. I mean, they would probably say, let's figure out different words to use. Mm-hmm. I was an international educator working independently on a team of other educators in Madrid. Well, what was the name of the organization? Pioneers. You don't want to lie, but you also want to put it in a setting that is accurate to the work that was involved, and yet clear to a potential employer. Also, missionaries are really humble. We've talked about that already, and yet cover letters and resumes are not about humility. They are talking about, I can do these things. I do actually love getting cover letters and resumes where people will say, here are my StrengthsFinder strengths. You know, it helps me, and if they know their Myers-Briggs, a lot of people are putting those kind of tool descriptions on their resumes as well. Even if you've been fired from a position, that was a conversation that I had with these 48. Well, how do I tell them that I was let go? And I just say, nobody is going to say anything negative about you from our organization for a reference check. They're going to direct those calls to me, and you have my word that I will put you in the best light that I can. And here's what I would say. And just being able to talk about how I would communicate to a potential employer just took the temperature down in the room. It was this, okay, let's try it. And then we'd build the resume. They have to be out there a little bit more, not necessarily talking about religious issues, but just saying, here's what I can do, and here's what I love to do. And it needs to be truthful about the previous work, and that if the question comes up, well, you are a missionary, how do we know that you're not going to be proselytizing here at Honeywell or Delta Airlines or U.S. Bank? And people then have the ability to say, my faith is personal and it's mine, and I will continue to love Jesus, but I won't do that to make anyone uncomfortable on the job. And my experience with the 48 was that was never an issue. I know that this is a different time period now, and my experience is a few years old, and so I can't guarantee that's always going to be the case, but honesty is good, but being able to tweak it in a way that might be more suitable to a secular vocation. Most mission, all of the 48 saw this as a demotion. They honestly did. This was a failure experience. I'm not doing what I wanted to do. My spouse is disappointed that this didn't work out. It was his dream. It was her dream. And anything that I do after this is going to be second place, second best. And as their vocational counselor, my advice to them was, how did that feel for you to verbalize that? Not very good. Okay, don't ever verbalize that again, because that's not going to help you. So you, like King David, have to say, we're going to rebuild the temple, but it might have different dimensions, but it's still going to be the temple. And that's how I want you to characterize it. Secondly, and this is a controversial thing at a missions conference, so I'm just warning you, I have no problem with people who say, God has called me to Mauritania. But Paul got called to Macedonia, and then he got called to Rome, and then he got called to Jerusalem, but his vocation didn't change.
Right.
And for these 48, the lifeline for them was that my vocation is not changing. I'm still an educator. I'm still able to work in an organization that benefits somebody else. So there's some altruism in what I'm continuing to do. I'm able to support my family. But vocation is, in my humble opinion, the call that helps people get through the crisis. It's not necessarily the geography. And the constant reminder that God has made you his workmanship, that you are talented and gifted and you have stuff to offer to the world and to your church and to your family and to your neighbor, and that part is not going to change. There have been some awful stories. I'll tell you the worst case scenario, and then I'll just pause and we'll do some Q&A here. There was one family that was part of this 48 that got sent back home, and 2 weeks after they landed, it was in a major city in the United States. Their oldest child was crossing the street, got hit by a car, and died.
Oh.
And who do you think got blamed for that death?
Oh.
Me. And can I come to the funeral? No.
Oh.
We don't want you anywhere near.
Oh.
And it was this, oh, Lord, did I hear your voice right? This kind of thing happens. I mean, would the child have been killed by a truck,
right,
or by a car, had we not made them come home? Probably not. And yet, those are the kind of things you go, they're just consequences to life that are unintended and unusual and unforeseen and unavoidable. And sometimes they will jump up and bite you, and it's hard. But as I said, 42 of the 48 would stand here, and they'd put their arm around me, and they would say, Denny, this really was the right thing to do. Thank you. Okay, I'm done. What has this triggered in you? Please. Yeah, once I learned that there was a technique to this, then it became available to everybody, and it became a service. We actually put it into a kind of a debriefing packet for people who chose to come back, and it was available to everybody. Yeah, good question. Thank you. But it really was started because I was feeling crummy about, you know, what are they going to do when they come back, and how can we help? And ethically, it just didn't feel right to say, God bless you, good luck. And
yeah.
So we started doing.
Sure about it.
Yeah.
Others, please. I don't know. Maybe somebody else knows who's in it, please.
Yeah, we exist as the way you see the workers in my new firm.
Ah.
So,
and are you available for any organization?
Yeah, we're a third-party provider.
And do you have business cards that you could
Sure. Give
to people? Okay, tell me your name.
Sarah Simon.
Put Sarah Simon in your notes with the way between, and if you've got that, do you want to just stand up and give your web or your email address?
Yeah, Sarah at thewaybetween.org. Thewaybetween.org has the information. We exist to alongside pastors and leaders in major life transitions, especially when they're returning, for decision making and resources.
Sarah, I've got a very important question. Why aren't you doing this seminar today? Thank you.
Wow, thank you for what you do, Sarah. Yeah, definitely needed, though. We exist for that reason because
Yeah. It's
such a needed care space.
Well, can I just put you on the spot? Is there anything you would add or subtract to what we've talked about?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the whole thing.
Okay.
But, like, I would just add that it's super needed, and that those two work in it. You work in it too, don't you, in the debriefing space of Barnabas? So, yeah, so I just think that, like, the awareness is becoming more greater now than ever, but especially for people midlife and then in their 60s, there's just this really real flounder that happens, so that's where we can come along.
Even in churches, I think the education of that, because I remember 10 years ago talking to a church, and they had a couple that came home, they ended up divorcing and all. And all that, just the leadership and the mission push they knew about this couple ahead of time, you know, 5 years earlier. And I said, what would you have done if you found out there's marriage difficulties around the field? I said, oh, we would have pulled them home. And I'm like, okay, and then what would you have done?
They
didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, they had no plan to work with a couple like that, or even figure out how to meet some of those needs on the field, with people that could maybe even keep that, you know. We worked with couples that have stayed on the field for 20 years or more now, even after marriage difficulties.
Yeah.
They weren't failures then. They didn't feel that failure, you know, so all those things.
You know, this fall at the Mental Health and Missions Conference, my colleague at Minnesota Renewal Center, Debbie Claver. Debbie, could you just wave? Debbie is a licensed marriage and family therapist, and she and I, along with another one of our therapists, will be doing a longer version of this topic at the Mental Health and Missions. The beauty of having Debbie is that while I talk about some of the nuts and bolts and how-to kinds of things, Debbie's able to talk about what's going on psychologically and how we can really add value to an individual or to a couple. And Debbie's forgotten more about therapy than I know. I'm not a therapist, and I don't play one on TV. And Debbie is a real therapist who has this huge heart, bigger than Iowa, and she will be doing this seminar in the fall for the Mental Health and Missions Conference. And by the way, if you've never been there, let me commend that to you. It's about 300 shrinks and about 50 sending organizations trying to talk about how we can do member care better. And it would be a good thing for you to do if you're interested in member care. So, please.
Find folks that have fairly specific skills, educational skills, and you know, outdated when they come back. So I'm thinking, for example, a friend of mine who's an engineer. Mm-hmm. If you were to come back after 15 years in the field, would he be able to plug back into that, or are those skills kind of lost?
Well, here's the hopeful part to what you're saying, and that is that unemployment in the United States now is at 4%, which is about as low as it's been. And the number of elementary school applications per opening, which used to be 300 applications per opening, is now about 40. So people are being hired in an economy that is rebounding. You know, if an engineer needs to be fully licensed and have CEUs, which oftentimes is the case, and they've missed out on the CEUs and have to go back, that's something that a church could say, we'll fund that for you to get those CEUs. Teachers have to have CEUs, lawyers have to have CEUs, therapists have to have CEUs. Sometimes it's the CEU cost that you know, CEUs are continuing education units, kind of the hours that people have to have of on-site professional experience. But churches can be creative in how to support people coming back. Or to say maybe you want to teach science technology at a private Christian school. Try something different. I mean, there are lots of different possibilities. One more question and then we'll end on time. One more answer. And I like answers a lot more than questions.
I've asked questions.
I didn't see any other hand. Thanks.
Like, how do we, you know, some people, it sounds like quite a few people in the room are in different care. I'm thinking about the local church, and how do we continue to help the local sending church understand that part of sending people is helping them learn. And like you're talking about funding you, and even giving space and time to put that out, if, you know, we return, and that was not on our study church's radar, that it would be, what, they weren't asking us those questions, how can we help you get reintegrated or figure out what you're going to do now?
Now, I've got two answers for you. The first one is that if you can become part of a committee, part of a missions committee, and be that voice, the other thing is that you could ask somebody like me to come and talk to your congregation or talk to your missions team and just talk about exactly what we've said here, that life in the mission field is filled with challenges that are huge, immense, and lonely, and that if people come back for whatever reason, I mean, the churches all too often shoot our wounded, and we've got to change that mentality, that if you're wounded and you're a missionary or you're a pastor, our response need to be, welcome to the club.
Yeah.
And that's the attitude that I think we've got to have. But sometimes it's another voice speaking into it. Last call, last comment, Sarah, thank you. I'm so glad you're here with that. Thank you.
Yeah, it's called Missionary Care Catalyst. I can put it up on the back here.
Please. That'd be great.
ETM is a great place to have your pastors or something come from the church there. It's over.
Barnabas puts that on, yeah.
It's a great place.
What's
PGM?
Pastors Commissionaries Conference. It's put on by Barnabas. If you look up barnabas.org, it'll direct you.
Can we express our appreciation to Denny? A couple announcements. In your folders is the blue evaluation sheet. If I could have you just take a minute or two right now, just fill out that evaluation.